Der Podcast vom Dog Elf.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Folge vom Podcast vom Dog Elf. Wir befinden uns immer noch in der Serie Wer wir sind, des Dog Elf mit. Mein Name ist Lisa Oettinghaus und heute habe ich mir meine liebe Kollegin Rachel eingeladen. Hi Rachel, schön, dass du da bist.
Hallo.
Rachel, wir haben darüber gesprochen, dass wir den Podcast auf Englisch machen. Because where are you from?
I am from the United States, originally from North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. And when did you came to Germany?
In the beginning of 2017. So I guess, yeah, it's been more or less 4 years exactly.
Mm. And you directly came to Berlin?
Almost. I was 3 weeks in Sweden. I went to Stockholm first. I actually came here not necessarily with the intention to stay. I thought I would come to Europe for 3 months and see what happened. I went to Sweden for 3 weeks. And then I came to Berlin actually just for an audition. Mm-hmm. And I just stayed. I didn't leave.
What did you do in Stockholm?
Yeah, it was really quite an impulsive trip. I knew a choreographer there named Charlotte Offerholm, mm-hmm. Which was actually, I would say, basically the only person that I knew in all of Europe. So I think I went there first just because I had some contact with her. And I went, what did I do? I went, I think, for just a few days in Stockholm, took some classes. And then I went to a very small city called Borås. Mm-hmm. There's a company there called Region Theater Vast, and she was choreographing on the company during that week. And she invited me basically just to come to take class to see what was happening. And from there, on her recommendation, I went to Nordans in Harnösand, in the very north. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was also there for 1 week. And then I think I did also an audition in London during that period. It was a very hectic period. I was very spontaneous. Yeah, I think I went to London, then I went back to Stockholm and took some classes, and mm-hmm. then I got invited for an audition in Berlin with Aura Dance Theater, mm-hmm. just in Lithuania, and I came. Like, I was like, okay, it's my first audition, I'm invited, so I come. Mm-hmm. And I did the audition, which didn't pan out into anything, but I don't know, there was something about being in Berlin that I was like, okay, let's give this a try, and mm-hmm.
And what brought you to Dog Eleven then?
How did it happen? I think in the beginning I was kind of taking profi classes everywhere, Marameo, maybe even in Tanzfabrik. And I came here first on a recommendation of a friend to take Christian Schwan's ballet class. Because mm-hmm. I was looking for a ballet class, but I was looking, for something not so classical. And they're like, yeah, go, he's really nice, he's making a lot of jokes. I remember this sentence specifically. He's making a lot of jokes. That's and I was true. Like, okay, it sounds like something for me. So I came to the class and immediately I was like, wow, this is a beautiful space. Mm-hmm. I really liked him and I felt really at ease in the class. So mm-hmm. I started to come back and I started to come regularly to that class. And I also came to some contemporary profis, like Billy Hanna, I remember, but I'm sure there were some others that, the names escaped me.
Mm-hmm. And how did it happen that you started teaching here?
Yes, it was kind of I went through the whole process. So I remember Katia, she was working down in the Trezen. And I was desperate for money, for a job, for basically anything at that moment. I had just gotten my visa here, but I was still basically completely lost. And I just asked if they needed some help in the Trezen or in the bar or anything like that. And they did.
You actually worked at the bar?
I did.
At the Trezen?
I did.
I didn't know.
That's how
I started. Remember.
It was, I guess, beginning of 2007. It was in 2017. It was in this year. I was doing it quite a lot. I mean, maybe it was like two mornings and one bar shift or something like that.
Mornings.
Yeah, it was mornings. Mm-hmm. That's why. And then I think I was also exchanging for the profi classes, but then for the bar shifts I was working, it was something like this. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, as it happens, people need replacements. And I was happy to replace. I was happy to teach. And of course, it started to happen more and more and more often. I replaced Saskia Klepsch a lot. Christian sometimes would ask me to replace the profi when he was unable. And then there was one moment where I replaced Catherine, mm-hmm. who was not here anymore, but she was here then. And I had a really good experience teaching her classes. And so then it was the moment when she was leaving and they asked me, hey, would you be interested to take over these classes, which I was thrilled about.
Mm. Same experience, by the way, with me when I also took over a few of her classes. And I was so, it was such a nice experience because her students were so far and like their perspectives. And like I also took over lots of children classes. And they were really special already. Like I had the feeling that it was a little bit different than taking over other classes or even classes where the teacher was more unregular. Mm-hmm. And her classes, I mean, she was here for like 25 years or something. So she really had like students who were with her for a long time.
Yeah,
I just really appreciated it as well.
Yeah, I mean, it almost felt, I remember the feeling like it was like taking over something kind of sacred, you know?
Exactly.
That like, okay, she's really built something. And then, of course, I will find my own way. But in the beginning, I was quite, I was kind of trying to be in tune with what had already been built to kind of also, I had the sense that I needed to build trust after,
of course,
after she left. But it was, I mean,
it's not an easy task to take over a class, especially with students who have been with the teacher for a long time.
Yeah. I think for the teenagers, I found it the most difficult because they had really come up since being babies, basically, with her. And they were a bit resistant to me in the beginning, but slowly.
Yeah,
we kind of found our way.
So how many classes do you have at the moment?
Well, I guess that's complicated because I have two online classes. But normally I would have four. I did have five, but I gave one of them to Sandra, actually, because I was actually feeling a bit overwhelmed with other work. So I have usually three on Thursday and then one on Monday, Pilates on Monday, and then kinder teens and then a contemporary class on Thursday for adults. And online now I just have Pilates and the kinder. Because, with the situation, I think it was just a bit too much for them to accommodate everybody. So I was happy to at least kind of maintain those classes.
I know from you that you, when you were back in the States, that you were actually teaching a lot. I think you told me once like 24 classes a week or something. Like a lot. And what I want to get to is you were teaching in the States and it was probably a different kind of school. What would you say was your how did you teach in the States? What's different to teaching here? Did you also develop in another direction? What would you say is your class about? Like, why do people come to you and not to other teachers? Or what would you say is your profession, like, in teaching?
I was teaching, like, sometimes even up to 30 classes per week before, so it was a big change. I would say my teaching practice has completely transformed here. I can't even recognize myself from the States to where I am now. In the States, the school where I taught they had a conservatory, they also had a regular program, but I mean, you cannot find a more regimented program. We were like given lesson plans each week, which were written for us. It was like 5 minutes doing this, use this song. Then you say this.
Oh, wow.
Then you move to this exercise. I mean, from everything for 2.5 years to adults. So there was very little creative freedom. Everything that we had to teach was specifically given to us. And in some ways, because I was a young teacher then, that gave me a lot of tools, but it also completely, it completely cut my personality off from what I was able to build with the students. And that was really disappointing for me. And I think I still carried some of those old habits in the very beginning when I came here, especially with the kids. My class was much more structured and I was like, okay, I have to have 10 minutes for this and then 20 minutes for this. And slowly as my practice, like my personal practice also changed, I started to be more and more led by the students. I think I became much more comfortable in letting myself be myself in the class. And then, relying on my own intuition, I started to incorporate more and more improvisation to the point that actually I would say I almost only teach improvisation now. I think I really became led by the class, and that I'm a very emotional person, and this is always what people, I think, say about me and reflect about me. And I've even had it, I think maybe it was Sandra who commented, or I don't remember. It was someone in the Trezen who even commented about my kinder class as it was growing and was like, all of the kids who come to you are so emotional. I was like, yes, it's true, actually. So I guess I draw this somehow because I'm very into, I like when it's people dancing, and when I get to see, whether it's a 9-year-old child or a 90-year-old woman, I want to see the person. And I don't want them to move like me. I want them to move like them.
Wow.
So this is really important to me. And it has been so, like, this for me is just amazing about Doc 11 and actually about Kirsten and Vibka, that I was a bit suspicious in the beginning. I was like, so you mean that I have the complete freedom to to just, like, form my class in the way that makes sense for me? And slowly I learned to trust that more and more. But yeah, I feel that I can really be myself, and then I can find a way to bring my, not only my gifts as a dancer, but my gifts as a person into the class. And that for me is really, I think, what defines my class, is the way that I lead people into states in which they can make really personal connections or intimate connections with people that, for example, maybe it's their first time in the class and they've never met those people before, but that they feel safe and that they feel, okay, in this place I can be who I am, and that's allowed.
Wow.
So, yes,
that's my amazing idea. But do you have the feeling, at least I had it, with the online classes, that that kind of gets lost? Because I would also say about me that I'm more of an emotional dancer or teacher, and I need the children or the adults to see the reaction, to see where we're going with this class and for that day. And with the online classes in the beginning, I was struggling so much because I couldn't feel this empathy. I couldn't really sense the students anymore. And in the beginning, it was a struggle. But my question is, do you also have this in the beginning? And can you maybe already see that it's changing just because it's already since a few months? Or that you have the feeling that that there's maybe even something good about it? About the online classes?
Yes and no. In the beginning, I have to be honest, this online class thing was not for me. I hated it the first couple times because I mean, even things which I take for granted, like being able to hear the people breathe, or that you read body language clearly enough to be like,
exactly,
this person's uncomfortable, how can I bring them in? Suddenly that's gone. So in the beginning, I struggled a lot. I would say that over the past year, I have found more tools to deal with it, by adjusting my teaching structure slightly, or giving more space for conversation, for example, to reflect like, okay, we did this task. How was it for you? I still don't like it. I think it's definitely better than nothing. I would prefer to do it than not to see them. And I think, I mean, especially for the kids, I can see how important it is for them to have something to engage with. And maybe also to feel like in the midst of all of this like pandemic craziness that something is also about them. But I think I've developed some new tools which I will see how I bring back into the classroom. Like, for example, I mean, I started to get crazy in my house. I was like, now we move the camera and we're under the table and this is our this is our cave, and here we are in the cave, and what's happening here? And then now we go to the sofa and play with the sofa and the wall. So, I mean, this was really a lot of fun. This happened more recently as I got more, first
bored.
Of all, bored. Yeah, and also more like, okay, what can I actually take advantage from the situation? And I mean, I realized that they love it. They love to interact with props. They love to have a context. So I will try to bring this definitely into my class when we can meet again. But I still, I mean, for example, something which has bothered me a lot is the kids I teach who maybe have a bit healthier home lives. They're the ones that show up to the online classes. And the ones that I know things have not maybe been so good at home in the past, they don't show up for the online classes, and that bothers me quite a bit. which this is, of course, not only a Doc 11 question, but kind of a worldwide question. Mm-hmm. So I'm very concerned about them, and I feel that there's most likely a reason why they don't have access to that resource. Mm.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's, for me, it's both.
Mm. I had this very nice experience that, especially with the online classes for children, that a few of the children who were a little bit more shy in the real classes, they really stepped up and they got really, they had this safe environment of home that they all of the sudden were much more outgoing and much more trying things out, and they didn't feel as watched. Like a few children don't like to be watched, or they get more shy then. And that was one positive thing, at least what I could see. But
for sure. No, this I saw it in a few of them, that I saw them moving in ways I hadn't seen before.
Mm.
So I was like, oh, okay, cool. Something is happening there.
Mm.
And
also concentration. Yeah. Like some of them, they're so concentrated, and I'm like, wow, I have never seen that like in a real class.
Yeah.
And they learn to focus and to concentrate on this one thing for like 45 minutes, 60 minutes. And I'm very excited how this is going to transfer later on to the real classes again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it can also be encouraging as to what they're capable of.
Because
sometimes I also have the tendency, especially with the kids, that I constantly need to change things to keep them engaged. And I got surprised that they actually can go much deeper into stuff than I realized.
Mm.
At least online. And I think that they will also be changed by this experience. So I think when they come back into the classroom, maybe their attention span will also be different.
Yeah, I'm very excited actually for that, and also to see what the body is, or how the body is dealing with this time of lockdown. Yeah. If I can see that they move different, or if they move smaller, if they don't take as much space as before, or if they have maybe problems with engaging with other students again. Yeah. Like, I'm very interested and excited for the process, and also a little bit afraid of it. But I'm very curious how this is going to show later on when we're going to be in real class.
Yeah, I mean, because even though we were already in October having some live classes, for example, I was like, I completely cut touching out of my classes and I was really trying to keep them in the spot. So the real class experience, they haven't had it in over a year.
True. Yeah.
And they've changed so much as people in that time. So yeah, it will be interesting to see how we reintegrate that information for them and also for us.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, for me, I haven't done a contact improvisation in so long now. I can't even imagine what that feels like, I think.
I mean, I don't know, do you train at the moment for yourself?
I do. In the moment, I mean, I'm going to some classes that are improvisation based.
Mm.
And I always have my own yoga practice anyway that I just do by myself. But I'm researching mostly alone at the moment, or with a friend, like just the two of us researching together.
Because that's a good point, like how we are going to step back into the real classes. Because me, myself, I also have the feeling that I kind of lost the connection to my own body and to my own presence. And that will be interesting. And it will probably also be very important that we are going to be set and like confirm with ourselves, especially in front of the students later on. But tell me a little bit more about it. So I know from you that you are also doing lots of projects, solos and duets. So you are one of the teachers who is still dancing.
Uh-huh, yeah.
What are you working on?
Yes. At the moment, I kind of have my hands in different things. So I worked a lot with film over the last year because it was suddenly a resource that I was like, okay, let's try to utilize this because it's possible. I've had kind of like a existing collaboration or like creative partnership with one of my best friends, Tama Branco, I guess we have somehow been researching together for like 3 years.
Mm.
And then like different things happening out of that. At the moment, he's working on his own solo project. So I'm not involved with that directly, but just like giving feedback. But we shot a film for that in Portugal back in December. which was called The Tradition and will hopefully be premiered sometime this year. It was meant to be premiered last year at this time, but yeah, it wasn't. Mm-hmm. So it kind of feels like this never-ending project that's never going to happen, but hopefully it will happen eventually. But I mean, that's more his work, and then I'm involved with it because our interests are quite similar. I'm also working on a new solo called Matrilineal, which I will also hopefully premiere this year, but I will anyways continue to research regardless.
So you're just like renting studios or finding places yeah. where you can rehearse and then in the end try to show it.
Yeah, I was earlier last year when the weather was a bit better. I was also doing a lot of stuff on location. So for example, I mean, yeah, there's so many actually amazing locations in Berlin. I shot a lot in a crematorium that's near my home in Baumschulenweg. Mm-hmm. There was also an arboretum near me with just like, yeah, a lot of great scenery. So I was shooting there. Where else? Yeah, I've been kind of finding mm-hmm. some different locations in which I could work on site. Mm-hmm. But recently, especially also because the weather was quite bad, now I'm actually mostly in Dock 11 just mm-hmm. researching alone. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And are you used to working by yourself or like with this duet thing with Telmo? Or did you used to dance in a company back in the States? Or what was your approach to dancing? I guess you studied dance.
Yeah.
And then like where did you study?
At UNC Greensboro. It's in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Yes and no. I mean, I've always been kind of a... Like, I've always been very individualistic somehow in my practice since the beginning without always knowing why. Now it's a little bit more clear. In school, no, I was doing a lot of group pieces and I had like a really great, I had a really great school experience. So I was working a lot with my, I guess you call them colleagues or mm-hmm. fellow students. Mm-hmm. When I graduated, I did dance in a company for 4 years in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. The first year as an apprentice and then the other 3 years just as like a, I guess, a resident artist or like full company member.
Good experience or?
Complicated.
Tough, complicated.
A tough experience. There was a lot of great things that came out of it. For example, like, yeah, we had really cool tours and yeah, I mean, I had the opportunity to dance consistently for those 4 years and to work with some choreographers from New York and other places. Overall, I would not look back and say it was a positive experience. It was quite an oppressive experience. Mm-hmm. My directors were not very open to individuality in any way. Mm-hmm. They were looking for something very specific and you were that and mm-hmm. that's it. Mm-hmm. A lot of things were based on ballet technique, although it was a contemporary company, but yes. There was also like a lot of body image problems and
same with me, yeah, because I was dancing in a company in Houston, Texas for 1.5 years uh-huh. and I mean it's a different thing probably for me. I'm very excited what you're gonna say because I came from Europe and then went to the States after I did my pre-studies uh-huh. and for me the experience was that it was a good experience all together because like my technique got much better.
Sure.
It was good training just for my body. But then on the other hand, like here in Europe, everything was open and it's about the process and it's about like what you want to give to the stage and like much more individual.
Yeah.
And there it was much tougher and like lots of technique and you had to turn like 3 turns and it was also a contemporary company and it was like I'm not a ballet dancer and I couldn't really do a good job in that company for my taste at least and then coming back to Europe was I felt so free like in every company I worked
I'm sure
because it was just total different experience.
Yeah.
So did you make another experience here in Europe?
Yeah, completely. Which, I mean, just from doing a bit of research, I kind of already had the feeling it would be like that, which is why I wanted so much to come. I thought that I would really thrive here and it turned out to be the case. I found that it was also important who I was and what I had to say. And I mean, definitely there's still a lot of toxicity in the dance world in Europe, no doubt, but it's a very far cry from what I experienced in the US. And I also felt like I had a lot of, for example, problems with eating disorders coming out of that company because there was so much pressure to look a certain way. And I was really able to tackle that here because nobody was putting that pressure on me all of a sudden. And I realized that I think for no one I've worked for here has it mattered. So that was very, very positive. I have made definitely a very different experience. And that also led me, like when I quit that company, I kind of quit in like a, I was quite dramatic about it. I quit in the middle of the night. I like had an epiphany and I sent an email and I was like, I'm done. Yes, it was typical me, especially in that time. And then I did start working a lot as a solo artist because I felt like I needed to come back to myself. I was actually, I mean, I was quite immature in school, but I was very experimental, very conceptual. I was very daring. And I like completely abandoned that part of myself to fit into this company because I thought that I should just be so grateful to have a job as a dancer. And in the last, like, I guess it's been now 4 or 5 years that I left the company. Being a solo artist for a while was important because I needed to find out, like, okay, but what am I actually about? And to come back to what's actually important to me.
Would you say that you actually, like, putting it very, very obviously, you're working on it in your solos, or is it just always there in the background? Because
it's very obvious. Yes,
it's very obvious.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I haven't seen anything yet, but
I will. I will show you some videos. Yeah, it's very obvious. I start to work a lot about my personal history. I've always been a quite political person. I mean, I've obviously grown into that as I've become more educated as an adult. But that's starting now to really come into my practice in a really literal is not the word I want to use, but like, yeah, I think it's becoming quite obvious in my practice and in my work.
What would you say is, like, if you say political, like, what are your, where's your focus? Like, where would you say, like, this is a very big topic for me, or in general, everyone has to know about. Where would you say is your focus in the political way?
I mean, as a person, I have several focuses and things I try to educate myself about, but of course you cannot be an activist about everything. If I have to put it very simply, I'm very interested in, because it's also my experience, the oppression of women. The experience of the female body, what we still project onto the female body, dismantling patriarchy, therefore like also dismantling white supremacy, and like more or less how my body and how my experiences have reflected that. Because something I've also realized as I've gone through this process of researching is that I departed from a toxic environment, and just because I now maybe have different ideas about things, or I'm in a different environment now, doesn't mean that those things are like forgotten. They're still existing inside my body. And I mean, as for most people, and I would say most artists, more or less. So I think I have a very big urgency to address these things, which are coming up anyways. They come up even if I try to work about pumpkins.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So I would rather be sort of more forward about them because it's very empowering for me. And then therefore it's empowering for the people which I come in contact with, which is very important for me. I don't know if that it's still kind of broad, but
yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
And I heard, I was mentioning that in the podcast already, that we're working on this online school, which is something different than teaching our classes online. We're working on kind of like an encyclopedia for dance. And you are also involved in that, and you're doing a project in it with, which is called Dance History.
Dancer History.
Dancer History. Can you tell us a little bit what you're doing there, what it is about?
Yes. So I'm just getting started. I'm very excited about this project. Essentially, this project has two facets. The first one is to bring in international artists, like, for now, from the Berlin scene, maybe later I'll reach out to other people, but people who are very, like essentially their practice and their work is in direct relation with their cultural upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say maybe even more with some sort of oppression which they experienced in their culture, which now they're working about here in Berlin in their practice. And then the second facet is to bring in children. At the moment, I'm focusing on like between 8 and 12 years, but I will also open that up. Bringing them in, also having them speak about their experience, and then doing a short demonstration of like, yeah, their own practice actually. And then kind of making this comparison between what professional international artists are doing and how the children perceive it. So essentially asking the question, are we thinking of the next generation when we're making work? We're thinking a lot about the past, about how we transform what we experienced, but how are we thinking about what we're transforming for the next generation?
Mm-hmm.
Do they feel related with our work? Do they think that we're asking the important questions? So yeah, this is kind of essentially what I'm trying to do. And I'm also seeing then how it develops between the people that I bring in.
So, but you're doing it in a frame of like small videos where you're educating or like talking about it?
I have an introduction video I did for mm-hmm. myself as a kind of first encounter, let's say. But then I'm doing, I guess it's like an interview. I interview the person for, yeah, just like, it's like 10 minutes, basically them talking about their work, themselves, where they come from, where they're going. And then it's kind of a short demonstration of their practice. So what I've done so far, and I have to see if I will keep doing this, is I ask permission basically to use videos of their work mm-hmm. that it's okay for them to show.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also do like a short little studio demonstration. So basically just filming them in the studio, working through their stuff in their own mm-hmm. time. And then with the children, more or less the same thing, about a 10-minute interview, them talking about who they are, how they came to dance, what it means to them, and then like what they would like to see in dance as part of their future.
Mm-hmm.
And then them doing the same, like making a small little example of their practice, even though it might be quite different from a professional practice, but actually the kids are quite creative, even mm-hmm. more than the professionals. They're like, yeah, pulling elements from the room, pulling props.
More untouched, yeah.
Yeah, actually. Yeah. So that's been really cool. And then I'm just, editing those videos together to kind of give a little, yeah, it's like, here's this person, here's their experience, mm-hmm. what can we learn from it?
Wow, essentially. Nice. Very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really excited to see where it goes.
Yeah, me too. And it's probably also going to still be happening when the pandemic is over. So we still use this tool to teach whatever we find is important.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, this is my hope.
Very nice. Rachel, thank you for your insights into your life and into your teaching. I'm very glad that we had the time to talk to each other.
Yeah, me too.
And yeah. Dear listeners, thanks for listening and see you next time. Bye.